Time now for another episode of Pat from the Past podcast. Matt Smith along with Paul Perillo. And we're pleased to be joined by,
well, soon to be. I don't know what year he retired. I can't remember, so I can't do math in the end.
He looks pretty good.
But former Patriots kicker and soon to be Hall of Fame kicker, we all hope, Adam Vinatieri. Adam, thank you so much for coming here and joining us.
It's greatly appreciated. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
What an
introduction. Thank you.
Let's tell fans what you're up to these days. What is Adam Vinatieri doing to keep himself busy these days?
Well,
because you just retired last week, right?
Yeah. A couple years now. I've been really enjoying some family life. It's when you're 50 now and just not too long retired, you get to do a lot of fun stuff. So been coaching both of my sons in football and baseball and just really just kind of embracing the opportunities of doing some stuff that I never had the opportunity to do before. So getting to the honey-do list, getting to stuff that I've put off for years and kind of just chipping away at some things that I wanted to do. A lot of traveling. I have a ranch out in Missouri, so I do a bunch of hunting and fishing and traveling and doing some of that stuff. So just enjoying some free time. And it's nice. It took me a long time to reprogram my mind into the not get up in the morning, get your cup of coffee on the way to work, and doing all the, you know, it really took me about 2 or 3 years to decompress from football schedule and be able to watch the news and drink a cup of coffee at a slower pace, I guess. So it's kind of been a fun transition for me.
I think Patriot fans and football fans alike, back in February when the Super Bowl was around, they saw the FanDuel commercials and they said, well, who's this person? That's not Adam Vinatieri. That's not the guy I remember. So I think a lot of people were going, wow, look at, and we'll talk about more of this later, but you've sort of transformed yourself from the skinny kicker that was chasing Herschel Walker down. You look like you could be in a bodybuilding competition if you wanted to tomorrow.
I don't know about that, but I've had a lot of free time to stay in shape. My oldest son is 20 years old, trying to get into a little bit of this influencing stuff. So he's kind of been pushing me, helping me with diet. And you know, boy, I tell you what, it's one of these things, like I'm holding on for dear life. He's shooting this away. And so he doesn't have me yet, but he's not far off. So I think he helps me. It's probably that competitive nature, too, that you have in football. And it's fun kind of just doing some stuff that way, too. And you know, I've always said, like, people are like, you know, why do you want to do this? And the tongue-in-cheek answer is, hey, you know what? When I get out of the shower, I want to look better naked than I do with my clothes on. And it sounds silly, and it's not really. But at the end of the day, you know, at some point, I'm going to continue to keep getting older, and I just want to feel good. I want to keep my body in shape. I want to be able to do a bunch of stuff, and looking in the mirror and being proud of the hard work that you continue to do is important to me.
Well, shouldn't he look? He should be very proud of how he looks in the mirror.
Are you saying that we're not proud of how we look?
No, I didn't say that, but
that's what it sounded
yeah,
like to me.
Yeah,
but whatever.
So with the, I'm interested in the coaching the kids too. And you mentioned they're a little older. Did you get a little bit of a coaching bug? Did you like that?
Well, you know, well, and that's the fun thing.
If you didn't, you're not doing it right.
Well, and that's the fun thing. High school plays on Friday nights, and, you know, you're always kind of one of these, you know, you go to a game, but and you want to be a part of it, but you're always thinking about your own football stuff, and you know, you're traveling on the weekend, and you miss out on some of the stuff. So when they were young, I coached them in some soccer and stuff in the off season, in the summertime when you had some time. But I really enjoyed trying to help young and impressionable kids, you know, teach them football, teach them all the right stuff, you know, like how to take pride in your job, and you're playing for the insignia on your head and the name on your back and the, you know, so it's not about just you, it's about your team, and trying to instill some morals that I've learned from Hall of Fame coaches, some of the greatest people that I've been around. I get goosebumps thinking about it, just because it's like, it's fun to be able to share some experiences and what you've learned through 24 years of playing in the National Football League. There's lots of lessons to be learned, and teaching them football, the X's and O's, is one thing, but teaching them how to be accountable and how to help your team win, and hey, this stuff is important. You know, in high school, there's so many things that are pulling them in different directions. If it's school, girls, parties, this, that, and all that stuff, and you're like, hey, you know, you get one shot at this. You know, you might have X amount of years, and teaching them, hey, listen, not many guys get to play in college. Not many guys, even a lot less get to play in the pros. So for some of you, this might be your last year if you're a senior in high school. Like, let's go out with a bang. Let, you know, let's do the best we can. And we've had some success. Their teams have been to some of the state championships and stuff. So it's I get that competitive side. I'm not on the field. It's more stressful for me not being able to contribute on the field, you know, trying to teach these kids that way. But I enjoy it. And then my younger son is going into eighth grade. He's a wild man. He's the redheaded crazy kid. Where he got the color, I don't know. But it's just so much fun teaching those young kids and watching them grow and mature and all that stuff. So I love it. I'm not getting paid to do it, and it's not why you do it. It's for the love of the game, and it truly is. And I think it's a ton of fun.
It's awesome that you're able to do that with your kids. And this one is a little bit different, and probably not a name that's familiar to Patriot fans, unless they really did a deep dive into your career, Adam. But it's kind of similar, like Doug Blevins.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He didn't have to help you. And I don't know how instrumental he was in your career, and maybe to help set the stage before you do. Here's a guy who is teaching a future Hall of Fame kicker how to kick, who's doing it from a wheelchair. Hmm. How instrumental was he in your career, Adam?
Yeah, so my senior year in college, I would say that people would say that he was raw. He had good leg strength and power, but he was still raw, right? I never got really any real coaching other than what I learned on my own, you know, go out and kick a ball and figure it out on your own. There's not that many kicking coaches out there, and even as many as there is, I think there's half of them that actually know what they're talking about, right? So I met Brian Hansen, who was a guy that was from South Dakota, that was the punter for the Jets, who had known Doug, and working out with him, he said, hey, go check this guy out. You know, he's passionate about it. He's pretty smart. Went out and worked out with Doug, and he said, you should move out here and work with me. And so I moved to Abingdon, Virginia, got a job waiting tables and helping the high school team out there just so I had a place to work out and kick and all that stuff. And Doug and I worked for a year, and I, you know, obviously, hindsight, you know, had an opportunity to play for the Amsterdam Admirals, which was the NFL European League, and Doug was helping with that league as well, and it kind of springboarded me to the Patriots, and the rest is history. You know, it was pretty neat. But having along the way, I mean, there's so many people that helped along the way. Obviously, I have a great family and parents who took care of me and gave me what I needed and taught me their true life lessons. But coaches and you know, friends and people, you know, I mean, there's a million people that you can thank for the success that you have. And I'm not just talking me, anybody in life, you could probably look at that way too. But yeah, Doug was definitely helped me develop my skills to the level that I needed to get to, and then from there.
So what was that experience like? You get to meet Doug, and you find out he's got a little bit of a different circumstance, as Matt said, you know, not a guy that you would expect to be a kicking expert in the situation that he's in. What was your first thought?
He had cerebral palsy. I get to the airport, don't know that he's in a wheelchair, gets wheeled up to me, hey, Adam, great to meet you, you know, crippled hand and all this, and I thought I was getting punked. Honestly, I was, like, looking around like, this has got to be a joke, right? But later that day, we went out onto the field, and he was a kicking coach in a wheelchair with a linebacker mentality, right? Mm-hmm. Like he was always fired up, always had a great attitude, always wanted to go. And so I knew within minutes that he not only knew what he was talking about, but I knew right away that we were going to have a good relationship, you know, moving forward. So spent the week with him, and he said, you know what, I think you got what it takes, but you need some fine-tuning. And he said, you know, how bad do you want it? And I said, more than anything. He said, pack up, you know, give a two-week notice, pack up your stuff, and come out here. Get a job. We'll work together for as long as it takes. So gave my two-week notice, and he expected me there like 3 days later. I drove through the night, got there in less than a day, and you know, his wife goes to check the newspaper or whatever and sees that my truck is parked. You know, I'm sleeping in my truck. I didn't want to wake anybody up when I got there at 3 o'clock in the morning. But he told the stories like, man, when I saw that, I knew you were committed. So together we did some great things.
What was the experience like in Europe? You know, Patriots are obviously going to be heading to Germany this year, but Amsterdam, different kind of league,
right?
You know, what am I getting myself into here?
So I loved it. I loved my experience in Europe. a lot of the guys who got allocated, so it was kind of one of these, most guys got allocated. I just got drafted by the Admirals to go and play there. The guys that got allocated had probably a different idea. It's like, oh, man, you're demoting me to the minor leagues, and they didn't really want to do that. For me, it was a stepping stone. I was like, this might be the best opportunity that I'm going to have to, and it's professional football. Now, we're not getting paid a ton of money, but you're getting to see a bunch of different countries. You have a day off. I jumped on the train, went and sightseed on my day off. I thought it was awesome. The level of football was another bump up from what I was used to at the college level. And I sat there and I was like, hey, this is my opportunity to show these NFL teams what I am about, what I have. And so it was great because it was a truly professional thing. You're not going to class anymore. You're not worried about grades and all this. This is about your skill on the football field. And fortunately for me, it worked out pretty well and did pretty well. And, you know, the Patriots and the Colts were the two teams that were really interested in me. And Mike Swetman was a special teams coach that I talked to every week when I was over there. And he said, listen, we've got an older kicker, Matt Barr. He said, we just signed Tom Tupa as a punter. We don't have a guy that can kick off, and we need a guy. And they said, we're going to bring in a couple rookies. The best one's going to get a job. That's what I was told. And I said, well, I'll roll the dice with that. I'll give them what I got. And at that, you know, you have to trust the fact that they're telling you the truth. We get to training camp. There's myself and a couple, Blair Cully and another rookie there. And it worked out. They ended up cutting those guys. And then it was just Matt and I, and we were competing for the job. And Bill Parcells, before the third preseason game, he said, I don't know if I can say this or not, he said, well, it's kind of PG.
Yes, related,
right?
Right.
He walked up, you know, before the meetings, and he said, hey, Adam, this is the deal tomorrow. You're going to take all the kicks. You're going to take all the field goals, extra points, kickoffs. He said, see if you got what it takes or if you pack up your shit and go home. He said, are you all right with that? And I said, yes, sir. Had a good game, and they cut Matt Barr the next day. And I didn't even know. I walked into the building the next day feeling pretty good that I kicked pretty well in the game, and he called me into his office, and he says, I don't want to hear anything in the media about, you beat out Matt and this and that. At this point, I still didn't know Matt wasn't here. I was like, okay. And then all of a sudden, the old Foxborough Stadium, the old dungeon, we walked downstairs, and guys were like, hey, man, congratulations, good job. And I was like, holy cow. Like this is it, now it's becoming real. But even at that point, I'm so naive. I thought I knew what it means, but you're one bad kick from getting kicked out of here anyway. So.
Right, and we'll get to that in a second, but, I mean, I don't look at that as, I mean, Barr's a Parcells guy.
That's a Bill guy.
100%.
Yep. And so.
Favorite all-time kicker.
Right.
Yeah,
and
did some stuff with the
Giants.
So
he's a really good player, plus he's really tight with the coach.
Yeah.
So not only do you have to outperform, you've got to like double or triple outperform to beat out his guy. And I wonder if that was going through your mind as you're doing this, or is it just competition?
The way I was told that you're going to be the kickoff specialist this year, and then all of a sudden, as camp progressed along, they started letting me go head-to-head against Matt. And I think, listen, all the respect in the world to Matt Barr. Great kicker, did amazing things. His stats speak for himself. I learned a lot from just watching him. I think it was one of those perfect storm situations where, you know, he was getting older and he didn't quite have the same leg strength anymore. And I was a young-legged guy, and I was, you know, and I had the competitive side in it too. I remember Tupa saying, "Man, we don't know if I liked you or not because you were," I don't know if he said arrogant, but I wasn't backing down. I guess is my thing. And so we get into camp, and the first thing that I'd do is I'd know that, hey, outside of 45, Matt doesn't have much of a leg. So I'd warm up, I'd go right outside of 50 and hit every kick 50, 54, 56, just to say, I got more, right? So that's the difference. And I don't think that was, I don't know, maybe Coach Parcells maybe was like, well, we'll give him a shot, and if he sucks, we'll bring back Matt. You know, I don't know what the thought was, but I was just happy to have the opportunity to show my skills.
Because I don't remember if it was week one or week two, and we're talking 96
week two.
Year.
Week two in Buffalo.
Week two in Buffalo,
yep.
And you missed three.
Missed an extra point and two field goals, yeah. And I
so that's the old NFL line, not for long.
Absolutely.
Are you feeling any of that at that point in time?
For sure. No, I felt that day, every day before, and every single day of my career after. Like, I never felt comfortable. And not to say that I didn't feel comfortable, because I was confident later on in my career, my skill level and all that, but I was always like, hey, listen, don't ever get complacent. Work your butt off every single day. Off seasons, make sure you're doing all the stuff with the training staff and the weight room and eating right. I always felt like, listen, you are always a week or two or three from get from you know, they're always looking to either replace you with somebody better, cheaper, whatever. So I understood the game. I understood. So I never felt like I was overly comfortable. Now, you know, a couple Super Bowl kicks in a few years later, I don't think that you're not week to week. But on the other side, I always felt like every single year I had to reprove myself. And maybe that's why I played as long as I did, because I never felt like anything was guaranteed.
So now you go to week three in Jacksonville, and you don't have all those Super Bowl kicks on your resume.
Absolutely.
Yet.
No.
So did you feel like you were week to week? I think you made five that day.
I know Parcells said I was week to week. So, I mean, I didn't want to listen to the media, but I knew what that meant. And thank goodness, I think I made five kicks and a game winner at the end of the game. And
in overtime.
Yeah, in overtime. And that kind of built a little confidence and kind of gave me a little bit. And the rest of the season, I don't want to say I think I still missed a couple kicks after that, but it was pretty good season after that moving forward. So it helped out. I think that week I needed it.
Matt, Fanboy Paul was at that game.
I remember being in a parking lot waiting to go to a wedding and staying in the car going, I'm not going to leave until he makes this kick, which I was confident in. Let's fast forward a little bit that year, Adam, and we're talking about kicking, and that's what your role is, and nobody expects the kicker to be able to make a tackle, get in the way maybe if you can. Right. It's week 15 down in Dallas, and it's the great Herschel Walker, all the speed, all the strength and everything like that. And for all of the moments that you've had that are so memorable, Super Bowl winning kicks, overtime in the Snow Bowl, with the Colts, all-time leading scorer, and so many people talk about the fact that you chased Herschel Walker down your rookie year. Do you think that play, you know, I don't know what people think that are kickers, but my guess is linebackers and defensive linemen look at you a far different way than maybe the rest of the team. Yeah. Did you get a sense at that point in time that your teammates were, oh, maybe this isn't just a kicker, whatever that means. Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah. You know, I kick the ball, he takes off and he breaks open, you know, and I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, you know, like he's got a lane to the end zone. And I remember turning and running, and unfortunately I wasn't that close to him and I didn't really have an angle on him, and I just start running, and I just remember to myself, I'm like, I'm not going to let him get to the end zone. And good Lord gave me 10 seconds of speed, maybe. I don't know how it happened, but he wasn't slowing down, but I was catching a little bit of ground, and I end up tackling him at the 20-something yard line or whatever. Saved a touchdown. We end up losing 12-6. I think it was all field goals in that game. And I remember probably the greatest compliment Coach Parcells ever gave me. It was right after that game, and he said, listen, that was one of the best plays I've ever seen. He said, your team is going to treat you differently because of it now. I had no idea what that meant, but I think I earned a little bit of respect, not just, oh, he's our kicker. He's like, hey, this dude cares about the team, and he that's a great play. It wasn't about that. It was always just about, like, hey, how can I contribute? How can I help the team? And what can I do to ultimately save a touchdown and hopefully help us win the game? And I think at that point, yeah, I think to a certain degree, guys looked at me different, treated me different maybe a little bit at that point.
I was going to say, would Parcells say, did that materialize?
Yeah, for sure. I do remember a bunch of guys after that, like the following day, the Monday meetings that we're watching. You always have a team meeting, and then you break right into special teams, and you watch all the special team stuff. And, you know, Coach Swetman made a comment about it, and guys were like, dude, Vinny, that was awesome. That was like, hell yeah, dude, you know, that was awesome. And for me, it was always like, I've never shied away in the weight room. I never shied away from other conditioning stuff, because I wanted guys to know, my job's physically less demanding, easier, for sure. I don't get broken up and beat up and bleeding all over the place and stuff. But I didn't want them to think that I didn't care any less. So, I mean, it was always a challenge for me. Like, the competitive nature was always like, hey, I'm going to go in the weight room, and I'm going to do my best. And so the running backs are over there going, damn it, I got to work harder because I can't not beat him. You know what I mean? And so if I made my team 1% better just because I was working my butt off, awesome. I'm trying to get myself better, but it was always that way. And I think that was one of the cool things about our team in particular. We had such great leaders. I was a young guy. I wasn't a leader. I was just trying to keep my nose clean and not get in trouble, right? But we had the Willie McGinnis and the Brewskis and the Vrabels later on, you know. And I think those guys, I just remember Willie always saying, hey, 6 a.m. lifting group, be there kind of thing to all of the defensive linemen. And even if you were on time, if you were the last guy, you were getting punked for being late, right? And you might be there at 5:45, but if you're the last one, and that's a different mentality. Not every team has that, and I think that was the reason why we were so successful, because guys didn't shy away from holding each other accountable, but you have to hold yourself at the highest standard and the highest level to be able to say, dude, you're not doing your job. You're not doing it right. So you can't do that unless you're doing things right. And I think our group of guys at the beginning of the era had that. And I think, obviously, amazing coaching. Tom Brady, can't say enough. I mean, you got to have coaches. You got to have players. But we had a really, really, really good group of guys that did everything they had to do to be successful.
It sometimes doesn't get the credit of that. And what was it that Harrison would say at like 5:30 when Brady walked in? Did he used to say like good afternoon?
You slept in today?
Or good afternoon. Yeah. It's 5:30 in the morning and he's coming in and they're busting balls about it's holding everybody accountable and making yourself accountable is what you're saying, right?
And it's not that way everywhere. I promise you, like every team, not even a team, when I say team, I'm not talking organization. I'm talking every single year you have a new team.
Right.
You've got 20 different guys. You know, some guys are gone, some guys retire, some guys, they're new. It's a different team every single year. But when you have the leadership, and the leadership doesn't have to come from coaching. I've said it a million times. I say it to the high school kids, I say it to young kids. Leadership is always the best when it comes from the players. When you take that ownership yourself, because having a coach harp at you or whatever, yeah, you're doing it for the fear for your job or whatever. But when your peers are doing it, it just means different.
Can I ask you that 96 team, when you come in, do you feel like that sort of set the groundwork for what ended up happening? Did you feel like that team maybe, you know, as a Super Bowl runner up? Doesn't
so
really get as much.
I'm super naive. That's my rookie year. I don't know. Like, I sat there and I go, shit, this going to Super Bowl thing's easy. We'll be back again. 5-6 years later before we make it back again. I knew nothing. You think you know a little bit about whatever's going on. We did have, you know, we had good leaders and some good old vets and stuff like that. But we still were a little ways away from it. And then, obviously, Parcells leaving and Belichick leaving and Pete Carroll coming in. And the team kind of changed a little bit at that point. Still good, just different. But I think when Belichick came back and, you know, nobody knew Brady was going to be Brady. You know, we see his pictures from his draft day stuff. And we're like, look at this chunky dude. What? But I've never met a more competitive guy than Tom. The way he transformed his body, the way his competitive side, his study habits. And I say him, there's 20 other guys. There's 50 other guys that are doing the same stuff. But Tom's the quarterback, so he's the captain. He's the figurehead. But I just think it was just that's why it was so much fun. You know, Belichick never made it comfortable ever. And we always said we're all walking on eggshells. I remember us winning a game. Josh Miller sitting next to me, and so I don't know what year this was, but it was during the 9 or 10 in a row run that we had going on, and remember who it was, but we whooped the crap out of a team. We won 35-7 or something. I mean, it was a big scoring game, and it was never really close. And I remember Belichick walking in and go, "Oh, you guys feel pretty good about this." And I won't tell the whole story because there's a few explicits in there. But he's just giving us the business, right? And he went down the list of guys like, "Hey, Tom, okay, you know, think you had a good game? Well, here you're thrown into a defensive team meeting." And, you know, we're kind of chuckling and giggling a little bit. And then, "Oh, you think this is good enough? Well, now you're trying to get your quarterback killed with your offensive guys." And then he flips it over to the defense and flips it to the special team. And he went through the list of guys. And I'm like, and I remember Josh nudging me and goes, "God damn, I thought we just got done kicking the crap out of this team, right?" But he just kept it real. And he's like, "This is okay if you're playing this team. But you think this is good enough when you get to the playoffs? It's not, right?" And so there was always a feeling of we're really good, but we're never going to get complacent. But if we continue to do what we're supposed to, we should beat the piss out of everybody. And that's why it was so much fun. Practices weren't fun. Meetings weren't fun. But Sunday after the game was always fun. You know, and that's why you start to build you build a dynasty or a legacy of. That's why guys wanted to come and play there because they just knew it's different, and it was different.
Do you have to be a different kind of a person, though? Like, everybody can't take that.
Like, for sure.
You know?
100%.
You come off a 35-7 win, and you think you're the cat's ass, and you're expecting to Monday to see all the highlights and everything. Instead, every single unit gets ripped. You've got to be able to accept that and go, this SOB is doing this for a reason,
right?
And it has to take a different kind of cat to accept that, doesn't it?
And that was early, too. That was when we were still developing stuff. Like, I think Coach Belichick, and I think he would say that at the beginning he was much tougher than when some of the vets, when the Willies and the Brewskis and the Vrabels, now we're older veterans and we've been through, it starts to change a little bit. And not a lot, but he's maybe like, okay, hey, I love the opportunity practices. Hilarious. Yeah, that's good. Hey, vets, you're going to take the time off and you young guys are going to get killed today, but this is an opportunity practice. I love the terminology. It's funny, you know. It was, you know, whatever. But it's always one of those things that I learned so much. And what I think you learn is you can handle and your body can do amazing things if your brain allows you to, or if your brain just gets out of the way and doesn't tell you you can't. You know what I mean? So maybe that's a little bit of the military way of knocking guys down to build them back up into what you want to do. And you know, I mean, Parcells had military background and Belichick did, so maybe that's some of that. But there's a million ways to skin a cat. I know there's lots of teams that won Super Bowls, different philosophies, but their formula's pretty damn good.
So both of them, right? So two Hall of Fame coaches. Well, obviously Belichick is going to be someday. How different were they, the two of them?
A lot of similarities. I would say more similarities than differences, but they each have their own way of doing stuff, obviously. They're different for sure, but there's probably a lot of similarities as well. And what I thought is these guys they both had a really good knack of bringing out full potential of guys. And different ways of doing it. Some guys need a pat on the back. Some guys need to be MF'd, whatever. But you know, we can look at guys that were problems on other teams, and they come in and instantly contribute and become a star for this team. Good guys that have helped these teams win. And that's because they towed the line, too. The guys that come in, they go, hey, this is a different organization. Players are different. You know, leadership is different. And then they just... they're not a problem. They come in and they do a great job and help contribute to victories and Super Bowls and stuff like that. It's great.
I want to follow up on
this guy. Just hold on. This guy's the coach maker.
Oh, I know.
I mean, think about
it. No question.
So we got Parcells and Belichick.
Right.
He played for Tony Dungy, who's also in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Pete Carroll's going to the Hall of Fame, too.
No question.
I mean, did anybody that ever coached you, like, just, you know, Joe Smith ever coached you for a day or two?
No, I've always said from day one,
really
I've been
point.
Super blessed to be around the best coaches, the best players. Like I pinch myself all the time and go, this, like, it could have been way different. It could have been, you know, you could play for a team that had zero success and zero whatever. It's just, I always sit there and go, man, I'm not the four-leaf clover. I just got lucky to be in the right spot at the right time through 20-some-odd years, and it worked out pretty damn good.
I think, you know, following up on something that you said, though, you know, there's a perception out there from fans and people who aren't in the locker room that, well, you have to treat everybody the same. And maybe there's a baseline of that, but when you were talking about some guys need a pat on the tail, some guys you need to ride them, were both Bills capable of doing that and knowing – I can't ride this guy because I might lose him, so I got to build him up a little bit. Conversely, I got to sit on this guy in order to get the best out of him.
Well, Parcells, I only played for him my rookie year, and he was scary as hell to me. I didn't want to be anywhere in general vicinity. Like, he was very entertaining. You know, we're in our stretching lines, and he's going through the line, and he's giving digs, and he's hilarious. But you don't want to get caught laughing because, oh, you think that's funny. I'm gonna turn, you know, I remember my rookie year, I'm going into the training room to grab a Band-Aid. I don't even know why I was in there, but I was in there. And I watched him walk up to one of the guys that were on the table, and he said, hey, let me ask you a question. Are you injured or are you hurt? And so I'm listening but not trying to pay attention. He's like, Coach, I don't understand. And he said, well, if you're injured, you're really not any good to our team. You're not contributing, you know, blah, blah, blah. He said, if you're hurt at least you can go out there and help our team do some stuff, you know, X, Y, Z. So he goes, let me ask you again, are you injured or hurt? And he's like, oh, shit, I guess I'm hurt. And he goes, great, you'll have a red jersey in your locker. You'll obviously be limited. You're going to do a few things, whatever. He goes to the next guy next to him. He goes, hey, are you injured or are you hurt? He went down the whole thing. And I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here, right? I'm like, hey, I'm not either. I'm just in here grabbing a Band-Aid. You know, I'm good, you know, whatever. So that's just a different mentality of, and that maybe doesn't even fly now. That was 30 years ago, right? But it's just a different mentality of the way they do stuff, right? With Belichick, he was the defensive coach at the time, or the DB's coach at the time. I didn't have a name. I was a hey four, or I don't know if I can, hey asshole. That was my name, right?
Many have been called
bleep
that
out if you need
right?
But I didn't have a name until about the Herschel Walker thing, and then, hey, now you got a name, right? But you have to earn your stripes, I think, to a certain degree, and I was okay with that. Like my dad coached me, and like I like that better than the everything is roses and come on, you'll be okay. Like no, you don't have to be my friend. Be a coach, be a tough guy, do what you need to. I like that way, but it's not for everybody. You're absolutely right. Some guys can excel and succeed in that. Other guys aren't very good at that. And I think what those two coaches in particular would do, they would get the guys. They would get the Rodney Harrisons and the Junior Seaus that love that stuff, right? And so then it worked for those guys. So Parcells always said that too. He's like, I want my guys. So when he would go to a new team, he would cherry pick 10 guys off the old team and he'd be their core guys, their leaders in the locker room. And they might even been past their prime. They might be a solid B now. They're not even an A player anymore. But that leadership brings everybody else up, and I think that's why they're so successful. I love the formula. It was never as comfortable, but I loved it.
Then you go to the 0-1 team. Just for those guys, you take it's Anthony Pleasant, it's Rick Lyle, it's Bobby Hamilton, those kinds of guys that that Bill Belichick now takes with him from the Jets.
Yep.
It perpetuates. So you know, I know you started off by comparing them and saying how there's more similarities than we probably all would think. But I would imagine that's one
Belichick
big
worked
one.
For Parcells. I'm sure he took a lot of his things and said, I'm going to throw my own little spin on it. But a lot of the things that he learned through football, probably the same way.
Yeah. Let's go to the snow game, Adam. And I'm curious, as you're driving in that day, when you see that. Now, kid from South Dakota, so it's not like you're a kid from Florida. So it's not like you haven't seen flakes before or anything like that. What's going through your mind as you see the weather that day?
Honestly, I shook my head and go, Belichick, you did it again. He did some voodoo shit to make the weather crappy again because he loves that. So, this is not a Belichick bash. I love you. You're a great man, and you're my favorite all-time coach. But he would be the guy that we'd go practice in the game field, and I'm like, we're tearing up the field. He's like, he can handle it. I'm like, handle it? Like, they're filling the holes in with sand, and then they're painting it green to make it look like there's grass on the field. I'm like, this is BS. Why are you doing this? He's like, because they can't handle it and we can't. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. All right, I got it. So, of course it's going to snow. Of course. I think the forecast said, spotty, little bit maybe. Not 8 inches of snow all day long, right? And so when we get there, I don't think it's snowing yet. It's overcast like it is most every day, you know, in the fall and the wintertime. But it starts to snow when we go out there in, like, pregame warm-up, like checking out the field and checking out everything. And what I remember is, like, the biggest snowflakes you've ever seen. I mean, gigantic, super cool cinematography-wise. You know, if you're taking a camera, you're taking pictures, it's awesome. But to play in, it sucks, you know. It starts snowing hard and harder and harder. Now you can't even really see across the field to the other sideline. I'm like, this is going to be absolutely miserable. But I'm thinking, this team from California, Oakland, they can't handle this. We're going to whoop their butts in this stuff. And they come out and play a really solid game. Most of the game, they're sticking it to us, right? They're playing really well. So, and as the game progresses on, it just gets more and more and more. And, you know, it was interesting going out there, watching the whole tuck rule stuff and all that, you know, when Woodson goes around the corner and, you know, hits Tom's arm, strip sack or arm coming forward, whatever, I'm sitting there thinking, Jesus, we're cleaning out our locker tomorrow, right? I'm like, because it looked like a fumble to me, right? And then all of a sudden the referees are, all right, we're under review. And I'm like, okay, well, thank goodness the rule at that time was what it is. I get it. And they changed the rule after that. I get it. But the way they judged it that way was the right call. And I'm thinking to myself, as I'm watching that, I'm thinking, man, we're cleaning our locker. And then all of a sudden the realism comes on to me is like, you're going to have to kick the hardest kick in your entire life, probably, to give us a chance after that. So Kenny Walters, my holder, comes up to me and he says, hey, Adam, all the snow, all this stuff. He said, I'm not going to even try to spin it. He said, I'm just going to put it down. And wherever the laces are. And I'm like, you're building a shit ton of confidence for me right now, bud. Thanks a lot for this. But so literally, we went out there. It's 45 yards. Try to get a quick sweep off of the ground. And I'm thinking to myself, listen, you got to think like three things. Slow steps to it. And I've got like as long as cleats in my plant foot as I can to get a little bit of traction and stuff like that. But I'm thinking, they're not going to be able to rush fast. So my timing can be a little bit slower because they're not going to be as fast either. So don't worry about that necessarily. But you're thinking like you're trying to run on ice, right? You can't take big, long strides. You're going to slide and fall on your butt. And so I'm thinking shorter steps, try to get your foot in place, try to get the ball above the line of scrimmage. I didn't want to smack my center in the butt, you know, that didn't work out very good. So I'm like, get it above the line of scrimmage. They're not going to be able to get a good push, so it's not, you know, not as imperative to get it as high if you can think of all this stuff as you're going out there. But I'm just thinking you have to get it online and give yourself a chance, right? So get to the ball, kick it, you know. I look up. I'm like, okay. I didn't fall down, got it above the line of scrimmage. It looks like it's going fairly straight, but it's still got to go 45 yards in a blizzard. It's not an easy kick. And honestly, God, as it's leaving, I'm like, got a chance, right? I'm like, okay, maybe. But when it got to the uprights, it's snowing so hard, I wasn't sure. I couldn't really tell until the referees went forward and raised their hand. I'm like, oh, my God, I made this kick. Like, I know the reporters said, you know, after the game, like, oh, you know, what's the percentage? And I'm like, I don't know, 50%. You know, I'm like, I look back at that and I go, that's 2%. You know, like, honest to God, I don't know how many times you can make that, but made it when I needed to, you know. Kind of had a plan, kind of executed a plan, you know. I didn't want it to come off like a 2-iron super low, but that's the best I could do at the time, and it was good enough.
And then you get, you know, it unfolds into overtime. And I know, Matt, you know, we were talking about this a little bit, almost anticlimactic because it was so much shorter, but there's still all that snow on the field.
Oh, no doubt.
More snow than it was before.
Yeah, same mindset.
The only good thing, if you can say a good thing, is yes, it was 23, 24 yards, whatever.
Right, close enough to chip it.
Shorter. But we call a timeout. Our guys are trying to clear off as much snow as possible. And then Gruden, maybe the only time that you should maybe not try to ice the kicker, if you will, because it gave us another 30 seconds. We cleared a little bit more snow. Wasn't completely clear, but it was way, way more clear, way easier. That one was one of those like, yeah, you're going to make this. Like I had all the confidence in the world that I was going to make that. And kick it, look up. I'm like, oh, thank God. So, it was a wild day. I'm happy that it happened that way. Never would want to do it again just because, but no, it was pretty awesome. I played in a few crazy games in Buffalo and stuff, but that one is, that 45 yarder to tie the game is by far my favorite kick I've ever made, even Super Bowl kicks and all that, just because the difficulty level was as hard as you could get. You miss it, the season's over. I mean, like, you couldn't stack any more negative or potential stressful situations on top of that kick, and to make that thing was pretty awesome.
It's really interesting to hear the way you say that, because there's so many people that would be, oh, you know, it's that's my job, and I deflect. When you hear somebody like Bill Belichick, who's said it many times, and other great historians of the game call it the single greatest kick in the history of the National Football League, how does that make you feel?
Well, it's a huge compliment. It's awesome to think that, whatever. But as I look at other kicks and other things, I haven't watched every kick from every. I know the Pat Summerall one and some of those ones, awesome too. But by far the most difficult kick I've ever had to think and or attempt. And yeah, you'd have to. I'd be hard pressed to find another one that stacks up to that. But you know, thank goodness my team gave me an opportunity to try it.
And a couple of weeks later, yeah, that's nothing. Right? Indoors,
tie
games.
On turf.
You know.
That was pretty awesome, too, because I just, you know, that game kind of back and forth, and then the Rams catch up, and oh, my gosh, you know. And I remember the commentator.
Madden.
John Madden.
John Madden saying, oh, you know, should probably just take a knee, and thank goodness we didn't. We had enough time. And, you know, our philosophy, or at least Charlie Weiss's philosophy, is, you know, let's see if we can get a couple first downs, if we can get in range. And in that year, I think I had five game winners, including that one and the one. So we weren't blowing teams out, but we were winning games. And that's the cool thing about our team that particular year is we lost to the Rams earlier in the year, but it was a good game. Came right down to the end, and we built a lot of confidence in that game. And knowing that every close game, we were just building more confidence and more confidence. And I literally remember them kicking off to us, and I go, we got a minute and a half left. I've seen Tom do it all year long. Hell yeah, we're going to do it again, right? J.R. Edmond, Troy Brown, bing, ding, ding, you know, Jermaine Wiggins has one. And just a couple of plays, just bang, 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 all the way down the field. And I'm just thinking, hell yeah, you know? And so the feeling for that kick is never, it's a game, you dream about it your entire life. You know, as a little kid, you're like, as a kicker, that's the dream, right? Kicking a game winner in a Super Bowl. I mean, that's exactly what you think about. So I'm over in the net. And I'm watching, you know, and I kind of have a routine. Like, hey, when we get to a certain yard line, I start to warm up a little bit. And everything's sped up a little bit, so you start a little earlier. And it's funny because in my entire career, when you get ready for game winners, everybody kind of treats you like you've got some rare contagious disease. You got leprosy.
You're right? No-hitter in baseball.
Yeah, nobody wants to talk to you, touch you, say anything to you. Two guys in my entire career in 24 years, two guys, Willie and Lawyer Malloy, the two guys that would say something to me. And Willie comes up to me as I'm walking in, and he gives me a whack right on the butt. Come on, man, go hit this thing. And I'm like, I can't feel my ass cheek right now, but thank you for that. But okay, good, you know. But and Johnny Rotten, our equipment guy at the time, Johnny Hillebrand, was like, you hit it, I'll get it. And he takes off down the sideline. So the funny things that you remember, because everything's happening fast but slow. Everything's slow motion, kind of, sort of. And we finally, you know, dinking and dunking and dinking and dunking, and Tom spikes the ball, and it's, all right, get out there and kick this thing. I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, 48-yarder, it's not a chip shot by any means. It's a long kick. But I'm like, this is, like everything's calm and quiet. Lots of stuff is going on, but it just kind of, your world just kind of shrinks to a little bit here. The only thing that I do remember is Rod Rutledge was my left wing, and Dre Bly's on the other side, and Rod is talking mad trash to him. Talking all just dumb shit.
I can see this. I can totally see this.
I can see it too. It's like just yesterday, right? And I'm the kind of guy that I like to get everybody set, because I don't want to take my steps back and wait back there for a long time. And so Rod's over here just talking trash. And Kenny's like waiting for me to get set. And I go, Kenny, make him stop. And he goes, Rod, get set. You know, and Rod's like, oh, shit. You know, he gets down, right? And so the biggest kick of your life, and this stupid crap is going on in front of you, right? Like the stuff that's happening in front of you. And so I take my steps back, and Kenny gives a set call, comes boom, boom, boom. And it's like that golf shot that you don't even feel hit your club, right? Like it's just nutted, right? Perfect, right? And I feel it leave my foot, and without even looking up, I'm like, oh, that felt really good. And I look up, and it's dead center. And I'm like, oh, God, you know. And at that point, I turn, and I'm jumping around and whatever, and Kenny's grabbing me, and the confetti starts and all that stuff. And it was just, I don't know, you know, it's just amazing at that point. Our team fought six years for me and all the years and all the stuff, but just that year in particular with Bledsoe going down and Brady coming in, the ups and downs, the 9/11, I mean, just the world was just a different place. Right. And for it all to come together like that, it was, I mean, I cried. Shit, yeah. I mean, absolutely I did. It was just one of those things that you couldn't help it. And then Johnny, who I love telling this story because I have the ball on my desk, and I see him, you know, we're the champions and all this stuff, and I'm bringing my wife down from the crowd, and where everybody's high-fiving and hugging and all this stuff, and then all of a sudden I see him coming over, and he looks like he's been in a dogfight, right? Face is all red, shirt's all pulled off, and I'm like, what happened to you? He goes, I got your ball, man. And I'm like, awesome. I go, what happened to you? And I wish, like I've seen so many videos of the ball hitting the net and all this stuff, but you never see after that, right? hits the net, trickles down, Johnny catches the ball. The two ball guys, or whoever they are like, give me the ball. He's like, nope, this is mine. And they're, like, attacking him, like, trying to, like, hit him and pull his arms and smack him and stuff. And he's like, was not giving the ball up. He runs inside, puts it in the trunk, locks it up, and then he comes out and tells me. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this really happened during the Super Bowl? I wish I had video of that. But it was just, incredible. I went off on a tangent.
No, what a great memory. And, you know, with the benefit of time now, and as you're saying, as you're aging a little bit, you couldn't possibly think of this at the time. But do you understand that in that three-week period between the two kicks in the Oakland game and the first Super Bowl to ever be decided on the last play, the first Super Bowl championship in this region, do you get an understanding of what your legacy is in this area? If you never did anything else, Adam, those plays right there in that three-week period, I mean, you never have to buy a steak in New England again for the rest of your life of what you were able to accomplish. And you accomplished so much more. But just in that period right there.
I didn't realize it at the time. But over the next decade or two or whatever, I love it because every person that I meet tells me exactly where they were at, what they were doing. Like, I've had people send me letters and say, my dad, who was elderly, who watched this stuff, physically was weeping in his chair. I got people telling me, we're running down the street and freaking out and just do all kinds of crazy stuff. And, like, for me, it's my livelihood. It's a game. It's what I've always wanted to do in my life. But I didn't understand what the magnitude of what it meant to everybody else until that time, you know. And so yeah, it's awesome. Like every time I come back and people, I love to hear the stories. They're like, I bet you hate talking about this. I'm like, no, I love it. Absolutely love it. I mean, it's a great memory for all of us. And you know, the Red Sox start winning after that. Like the Massachusetts, New England sports has been super spoiled the last two decades with Red Sox and Celtics and Bruins and, you know, like all the stuff that, like, it's just been amazing. It's just been a great run. You know what I mean?
You know, Bill, after that, I'm not sure how long after the season was over, but he was sort of, retelling his thoughts. And he said, if you had told me I was going to have my best player in position to win the Super Bowl, I'd have taken that situation. It's not often that a coach talks about his kicker in those kinds of terms.
I've heard him say that. I thank you for the compliment. Obviously, there's so many I would never ever physically, hell no, I would never say that. But I felt like I was a guy that contributed to my job like everybody else did. And I can't get in everybody else's head. I loved it as much as anybody. I tried as hard as anybody. Like, I competed as much as anybody else. But we had so many brothers, you know. Like they're not my biological brother, but there was my brother as much as anybody else in this whole world. Like there's guys that mean the world to me throughout the last 20 years of, you know, like, I call Willie right now. He'd be like, what's up? You know, or Bruce here. Like, the relationships that we built. And I always say that to people, too, like that have never won a Super Bowl or a high school championship or whatever. I said, you'll have that for the rest of your life. It will be different for you because of it. The relationships that you build with these guys, it's just different now. I mean, it's just because what you had to go through to get to that level, it's just a different thing.
You mentioned Brewski and Willie, and that's interesting to hear that pick up the phone and call those guys. What about Kenny and Lonnie?
We talk all the time.
Because you guys are literally, the three of you, you're practicing by yourselves the whole time.
Yep.
And the three of you are responsible for some of the greatest moments in franchise history.
No doubt.
And people say, hey, how was that kick to Bill? Or the media ask him, well, the operation was clean. And I don't think fans necessarily realize how important the operation is.
Oh, 100%. You only get recognized if you screw up. Me, a little bit different, but snap hold. They don't ever get even mentioned unless something goes wrong, right? And I was so blessed that Kenny taught me a lot about kicking and trajectory of footballs and stuff. He learned it from John Casey when he was in Carolina. And then he brings it to me. He's like, hey, listen, I can adjust the lean a little bit to help if we've got a big wind. We can take some of the draw off the ball if I lean it a little bit more. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Just put it down. I'll kick it, right? And over time, my trust level in him was incredible. Like I'm like, dude, like whatever you do, just do you, because I know it's it, and it made it so much easier for me because I don't have to worry about all this other stuff. And Lonnie, another, I mean, awesome as well. Like those guys, and that's funny that you say it because we have a little chain that we always go talking about family stuff or just funny stuff or hey, remember this or whatever, we all the time. Once a month at least, if not more often. So yeah, and Lonnie lives in California, Kenny's in Carolina, and I'm in Indy now. And so, but it never goes away. The relationship is as good today as it was 20 years ago.
Doesn't that make you feel good?
Yeah, and so the whole like, what is it? Slightly forward and to the left. Is that what's all Kenny?
Well, so the amount of.
That's how he wanted it held. You know,
right.
You know,
yeah,
when,
I do
when,
have
when
that,
you're
yeah.
a nerd,
little
when
bit,
you're a nerd in the media
stuff.
Core, that's
right.
that's the nerd. That's the nerd stuff we had to ask the kicker about.
Well, now that you're talking about that, then we'll explain it to the rest of the world. Yeah, a little bit of a forward lean allows you to get to hit the ball more solidly. Actually, opens the sweet spot because all little kids always sit there and when they put it on a tee, they hold it back, right?
Yeah.
And so they always miss, you know. And so a little bit of a forward lean, it allows you to drive the ball a little bit more. And if you play in New England, it's windy every single day, so you have to learn how to drive the ball a little bit. The lean as far as more, you know, away, you always want to lean the ball a little. So as a righty, you're going to lean it a little bit to the right, away from your body, because your foot, as it comes through, you want it to hit perpendicular to the ball. So, but Kenny could actually go, hey, listen, we've got a big left to right wind, so we want it to actually almost cut into it a little bit. So I'm going to give you a little bit less lean. So your ball, if we were inside and there was no condition, your ball would actually draw a little bit, but that wind's pushing it, so it's going to keep it straight. Or vice versa, if it's blowing the other direction, then a little bit more lean. So I never even understood that. And he's just like, don't worry about it. I'll get this figured out. But that was always, and it's funny because they never really looked at the holder and the kicker right before they, you know, there's a conversation going on all the time. And we'll find high ground or something. Like, we always want to go from a, you know, you don't want to put the ball in a hole and trying to, it's like hitting a golf ball out of a hole, right? You want to have it high ground. If you're hitting a scramble, you're going to put it high ground so you get a good clean hit, right? Same kind of thing. And there'd be times you'd be like, no, this is better here. You know, we're always working on, because he's on his knee, he can see the ground better than me. And it sounds corny, but that's the little things that make the difference in the grand scheme of it.
So we're talking about Lonnie Paxton, the long snapper, Kenny Walter, your holder, responsible for many things. If you go to the 2003 season and fast forward to Super Bowl 38, and I think there's a lot of people that just look at Super Bowl 38 and, okay, maybe that's really where the dynasty was born. You guys were dominant that year, started that 21-game winning streak, and you kicked the game-winning field goal again, and I think people don't know what's going on. Oh, yeah, Adam hit another game-winner. But that was not your typical game-winning field goal because of what was going on in that game. You actually missed a kick in that game, which probably people don't recall. And you had a kick blocked.
Yep.
You had unique circumstances that game, didn't you?
Yeah, Lonnie got hurt earlier in the season. We had another holder or another snapper that got hurt. And then Brian Kitchen, who was retired, came in. Bill knew him from earlier in his career. And he comes in. And he had a little bit of issues. He ended up cutting the webbing of his finger in the pregame meal, buttering a roll with a steak knife. I don't know how that happens, but long story short. And the whole week we had some trials and tribulations, a little bit of craziness that went along. So, yeah, there was a lot of extra circumstances that went into that game. But, yeah, you know, Brian's best snap of his career was the game winner. It was bang, right on point. It was perfect. But it was an interesting situation nonetheless.
So this time, though, you couldn't go out there never worrying about your snapper or holder. This time, I'm sure that was front of mind, but yet right down the middle again, 41 yards.
Yeah, well, thank goodness everything worked out well. Yeah, you know, it's one of those things like, you know, I think the good performers at any you know, kicking or a pitcher or whatever, you know, if you're a closer and pitcher and somebody hits a home run and you lose the game, you got to forget that, right? Because you're going to be out there again in 2 days later, and if you're still thinking about that, you're going to have some issues. And I think the best ones can clear their mind. And don't get me wrong, it's not easy to do. I mean, you're having a tough game or you miss a kick. Gosh, I mean, I remember the misses way more than I remember the makes. I really do. I mean, they just grind on you a little bit more because you're like, why the heck did I miss that, you know? So, yeah, having a miss earlier in the game and having one blocked earlier in the game, I'm sitting there going, oh, my gosh, you know. But you have to be able to walk out there in at that particular time and go, clear your mind and really just focus on the next second and a half, what's happening in front of you. And it's sometimes easier said than done. The ones that can't do it usually aren't around very long.
Were you excited at that point in time that you had another chance to quote unquote redeem yourself?
Absolutely. Yeah, I hate ending a game on a miss or something. Like you miss one in the second quarter, you don't get another opportunity. You're like, damn it, you know, I want to. You know, you just want to have. You know, it's not about stats and how many of that. It's just you always want to finish on a good note.
Do you? Again, with the gift of time, are you able, Adam, to look back at all and say that you were part of a team? You're the last team to ever repeat. The 03 and then the 04 teams, the last team in the NFL. There's been a lot of worthy candidates. Do you look back at that with a certain fondness of, well, that's really, it's hard to win one. It's really hard to repeat.
It's really hard to win three and four. Yeah, I mean, that even saying that. Yeah, to a certain degree, that's even more impressive, not because you've won two, but the toll that it takes on a team to make it to a Super Bowl. A lot of times it's hard to come back the next year because it's a month less off season. It's a month, you know, it's just more difficult. So, yeah, you know, those years were fun. They were just so much fun because we expected to beat everybody all the time. And I don't know if that's not an arrogance. It's just a confidence that we had in the locker room that we knew that the guys that we had, like, hey, if we play well, we execute Bill's game plan, we're going to win, you know? We didn't win every single time, but we won most of the time, you know?
Yeah,
it was a really fun run throughout that. And, you know, nothing against the Philadelphia Eagles or anything like that, but we just felt like we were a better team than them.
So with, obviously, the brotherhood that you talked about, how difficult was it after the 05 season to leave?
Very difficult. We could talk for 2 hours about that particular situation, but it I didn't want to go. I just felt like I wanted something that was fair. That's probably the nicest way I can say it. Never saw free agency for 10 years, got franchised several times. All I wanted was a multi-year deal. Fair money. That's all. And they played games, and then I finally got a team that offered me that, and I gave them an opportunity to match or to give a real offer, and it didn't come, so I left. And that's about as nice as I can say that.
So Matt and I were talking about this before you came in, and I'm not sure if it was on your mind at the time, if it was part of the thought process, but like ultimately the way it worked out, it may have been one of the best things that could have happened for you, kicking indoors. How many more years? 14 more years.
What has that ever happened to? Like, I mean, this.
Yeah, I was fortunate. I played two full careers with two different teams.
Right.
I mean, really. I mean, 10 years and 14 years. I mean, are you kidding me? That's pretty awesome. Going to Indy, you know, I always said if I was going to leave an incredible organization, I wasn't going to go to a crappy organization that had no chance of winning, right? So didn't say AFC, NFC, this or that. I said, played in crummy weather in New England for 10 years. If I'm going to leave, it's going to be it's going to be a South team. It's going to be a dome. It's going to be somewhere nicer weather, if you will, you know. And then I had a lot of teams that called, and then Indy made me an offer I couldn't refuse.
And was that a thought process? You know, like, was the indoor part of it, hey, this could really help?
I didn't really look at it longevity-wise. I didn't say, hey, I can extend my career doing this. But I did think, man, this is a – my stats shouldn't suffer going inside.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
If anything, they should improve, which they probably did over, you know, my field goal makes versus misses. You know, percentages probably did go up being inside. At that point, I think in my first 10 seasons, I'd never missed a kick inside, which I was like, that doesn't suck, you know. So
it's like Tom never lost a game in a dome for a long time.
Yeah.
And you got a chance at least to have one playoff game in crummy weather that first year, right? You were in Buffalo, you kicked Baltimore with five field goals in the slop there in Baltimore. I mean, that must have made you feel right at home, right? Just like kicking.
Well, it was funny because some of the new teammates there are like, man, I hated you for a long time. You better prove you're worthy of it. Gary Brackett, one of our linebackers in particular, he came up to me after the game. He goes, you earned my respect. Like, that in itself, I mean, because it was...
It's a 50-some yarder in
right.
there,
yeah,
on one of them.
Right.
51 yarder, I think?
15-6 or whatever the score was. So it was all field goals. Every point was scored by field goals. Probably a boring game to watch unless you're a defensive-minded person. But, it was a pretty good game.
I think from a Patriots fan's perspective, when you look back at that era and you look at the Patriots-Colts rivalry, Manning-Brady, it was one of the greatest periods of all time. You got to see it from both sides. Mm. What was that like to experience it from both times? I think, or I remember, not proud to say this, did you get booed when you came back in 06?
So,
I think there was some smattering of boos, weren't there?
So
well, I was booing.
This is exactly what they did, and I respect all of them for it. They cheered me when I came on. They booed me the entire game, and they standing ovationed me when I left, which is a respect thing, which I was like, I get it. I understand. That's cool. That's the gamemanship. That's the 12th player kind of thing, which was cool. I do remember later on when we came back, some of the fans, Vinatieri, you effing suck, this and that. And I remember McAfee, who never stays quiet for anything, turns around and he's like, really? He sucks? Come on, man. Like he just challenged that guy. And, like, all the people around him were like, that's pretty funny. Like, yeah, he got you, you know, whatever. And then it carried on. But I didn't usually like to make too much. I try not to pay too much attention to the crowd and stuff. But, yeah, you can absolutely hear it. But I get it. I mean, I understand. Like, listen, New England fans are buck wild. They're awesome. They're awesome. And that's what makes them awesome. I mean, there's truly an advantage of playing at home in New England.
You mentioned him, so I got to follow up with it. Please tell me you never have to pay when you and McAfee go out. Could you have ever imagined McAfee blowing up into what he's blowing up to now?
You know, when he said he was going to retire from football and he was going to start all this stuff, I'm sitting there going, dude, don't do it. What are you talking? Like, are you kidding me? You're going to give up multi-million dollars a year on the field? And he's like, I got other things that are going to work out good. And I'm like, holy cops. I'm like... he was right. I was wrong. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, he still had many more years of playing, and he was a great teammate. He was fun to be around and all that stuff. I'm so proud of him. He's done amazing. Like, I always knew he was the life of the party. I just didn't know he was going to kill it as well as he did.
You've been out now for a couple years. I think you need to wait another 2 or 3 years. When you hear people debate about Pro Football Hall of Fame, there aren't a lot of kickers in the Hall of Fame, Adam.
Two.
But I don't think that there's anybody that would take a look at your career, all-time leading score, the clutch kicks, the game-winning kicks and everything like that. And again, to quote one of the great historians of the game, Bill Belichick, he says it's a no-brainer. Adam, do you think about that? Is that on your mind at all? Is it important to you?
I would lie if I said I'd never thought about it. That's an absolute, that's not true. You know, when I played, I didn't ever want to talk about it, or I just kind of deflected that story. Now that I've sat back and thought about it a little bit more, obviously, you'd lie if you didn't say you want to be in that. Of course I do. It's a humongous honor to be considered one of the elite guys to ever play the game. I'll say this. You don't get there without playing with amazing teammates and having that opportunity. If I played, I don't know, pick a team. The Alaskan Eskimos, because I don't want to disrespect any team in the league right now. But if you play for them and you never play, I look at a guy like Jason Hansen. I think he's a great kicker. Played a long time. Played in a couple of playoff games. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get the recognition because he didn't get a play in those types of situations. So for me, I sit there and I go, if I'm fortunate enough to have a gold jacket, which I hope I do. I hope it soon, you know, whatever. And if it happens, it's more, of course, I had to kick those kicks. But I couldn't have been anywhere out there without all of my teammates, without the coaches, without having them having faith in me to put me out for these certain situations and stuff like that. So, of course, you have to make the opportunity when it presents itself. But there's just so many other, you know, people that they don't give you enough time to thank everybody that deserves thanks.
You mentioned Hansen, and there's a handful of other kickers that you can think of. Oh, you know what? That guy might have had a Hall of Fame career. But I think there's a unanimous thinking of, well, there aren't a lot of kickers in the Hall of Fame, but if there's ever going to be one, it's got to be this guy in Adam Vinatieri. How does that, you know, the fact that there just seems to be a consensus of it. I don't know that that's going to happen when these nitwits get in the room, because there is all that politics that gets involved in and everything like that. But there is a sense of this guy broke the mold, and this guy, his career, did it. That's got to make you feel proud.
It does. Yeah, it does. I mean, again, like I always tried to take every, not even every season, every kick, every game, every whatever, and do the best that I could to help my team. But when you turn around, you look back on your career, it was pretty awesome. It was pretty fun. Yeah, yeah. I'm so blessed. I've been so fortunate to be, like I said, to be put in the right situations with the right team, just some snot-nosed kid from South Dakota that nobody expected to even make the team. The fact that Bill Parcells didn't cut me when he did and said, hey, he's week to week. He gave me one more week. Thank you, Bill. You know? Thank you, other coaches, for, hey, you know what? It's probably, this kick is the hardest kick in history. He's probably not going to make it, but we're going to give you a chance. You know, things like that. Like without those opportunities, then I'm just a guy, right?
It's tremendous.
Perfect way to end it.
Tremendous. Can't thank you enough for the time.
That's fine.
This was really good. I hope you enjoyed telling the story. It was really, really fun for us. Adam Vinatieri, our guest, everyone.
Thank you for downloading this podcast. Subscribe on Apple, Google Play, and everywhere else you listen. Like the show? Please rate and review us. Listener comments and ratings help keep us high in the podcast rankings so new listeners can find us. Be sure to check Patriots.com for more news and more podcasts.